Hello, listeners. My name is Victor Rodriguez, and you're listening to Pulse, where we take a peek at Pierce's unexpectedly layered social environment. The theater has always been the place where people can go and revel with stories filled with the universal themes of love, lust, historical heroism, social commentary, and political discourse. Behind every great production, there's an even greater cast and crew who had to come together to pull it off. Today, I'm sitting with Anthony Cantrell, the head of the Art Edutainment Center at CSUN, at the Valley Performing Arts Center, newly named the Soraya Center. And he is directing the first play of the 2017-2018 season entitled Stupid Fucking Bird, which we will refer to from now on as SFB or Effin. Anthony, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. How are you? Thank you for inviting me to be here.
Thanks for coming. All right, let's jump on in. So this play is an adaptation of The Seagull, written by Anton Chekhov.
Correct.
So if it's an adaptation, what's similar? What's different?
So I think the title seems to capture a lot of the similarities in the sense that the Chekhov play is called The Seagull, and Aaron Posner, the playwright, calls it Stupid Effing Bird. So he's saying, yes, we are going to be telling a similar story. We are going to be using all the same characters. But by saying Stupid Effing Bird as opposed to Seagull, you get a sense of where Posner wants to take this play. So the plot lines are similar. The characters are similar. He actually follows the Seagull pretty carefully plot-wise. But it's the way that he tells the story and the theatrical conventions that he employs which distinguish it from Chekhov. And also, I think the reason he does that is because Anton Chekhov is almost unique to himself. There's no other playwright quite like him. And so I don't think that he would have been wise to say, oh, I'm going to try and write a Chekhovian play, because only Chekhov can write a Chekhovian play, just like only Shakespeare can write a Shakespearean play. So there's a theatrical technique that Chekhov uses that I don't think any other playwright would be wise to try and copy. And so he says, okay, I'm going to use the nuts and bolts of the story, the nuts and bolts of the character, but I'm going to tell it in my way. And the Aaron Posner way is much more direct and impassioned and confronting the audience with the issues of the play rather than the Chekhovian style, which is a little less direct, more indirect, more subtle, more subtextual. And we say subtextual in the sense of theater, of sometimes an actor will say something, but they feel something entirely differently. And in a Chekhov play, you're kind of monitoring all of those subtextual cues that the actor is giving you, even if they say something entirely mundane, because they may be feeling like their life is falling apart, and then they just say, can I have another cup of coffee? Whereas Posner flips that, and he gets right in the audience's face and tells them directly what the characters feel, what they want, and how they're extraordinarily passionate about trying to achieve the goal they're trying to achieve, which is usually in this play, finding love and finding that connectedness to another human being. And the complication of that, which is also true in Chekhov, is that very often in life, we love someone that does not love us back, or we love somebody that absolutely loves somebody else. And then the play has many different love triangles of who loves whom and who's going to get together with whom. And that's the kind of dramatic basis of it.
That's really interesting. Posner does go into this thing. I'm not trying to get away with not giving credit to, but there is a saying, and it's the way you speak introduces yourself before you do.
Yeah.
So the second Posner entitled the play, you know, Stupid Effing Bird, he was like, yeah, The Seagull.
It's a right.
Bird, but this is mine, you know, and
right.
That's what you were saying earlier.
Exactly.
And so you're saying subtext become text, you know,
right.
Euphemisms becomes directness, and double
right.
Entendre is, you know exactly what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, and it's not to suggest that the actors that we're working with in this play don't have some subtext and don't have ways that they will still try to get what they want by being a little more subtle. But just overall, as a playwriting kind of technique, Posner is much more direct.
And, okay, so this production is in the Black Box Theater we have.
Right, the Dow Arena
the
Theater.
The Dow Arena.
Yeah.
And naturally with a smaller venue comes a little more intimateness, right?
Right.
Is there anything going on with the set that kind of like doubles down on it and it's like, you are here, you are in this life.
Wow, you just said you are here. Yeah. Keep that in mind as you come to see the play. Because the first thing that I'm not giving anything away is there's a play within a play. And there is in The Seagull too. Mm-hmm. And there's a play within the play called Here We Are. And there's a sense that we are all watching this play together, meaning that the characters that are watching the play within the play are watching a play, and then the audience is watching those characters watch that play. So those layers of what we call in theater meta-theatricality. And then also the Dow Arena allows us, as you said, to bring the intimacy a little bit closer. And then without giving too much away, there are also little sections of the play where the audience is engaged a little more than they might be in a conventional play, and also more so than they might be in the main stage, where you have the separation of either the orchestra pit or what have you from the audience to the actors. So all of that is what I would say, it's much more porous. I'm thinking, speaking theater terms, there's the fourth wall, which mm-hmm. there's usually in many proscenium stages, where you have the audience over there, the stage over there, and there's like this imaginary wall that separates them, and then you remove that wall so you can see into their living room or into their whatever setting it might be. Well, this theater and this play, that relationship between the two is much more fluid and flexible. And I don't want to give away too much about how he does that, but that's something that's definitely a feature of this play, and also something that the actors respond to greatly, because they know that, oh, okay, there's going to be some engagement with the audience in a way that might be unpredictable. So,
and that's what you're saying is incredibly difficult, because I think other common mediums like TV or movies, they get away with it more. Because they're breaking the fourth wall.
Right, right.
But they're not actually in front of their audience like you are at a play.
Right, right.
So how demanding is that, do you think, of the characters, of the cast?
Well, I think if I would make a generalization, which could be wrong in many cases, I think theater actors crave that personal connection more than maybe a film or TV actor, because the film and TV actor, they're acting for the camera. And they're not acting directly in front of the audience, as you mentioned. So the theater actors, I think, love that sense of that sense of confronting the audience more directly, because they rely on them anyway. Even in a more conventional play where you're acting on stage and you are completely in your own world and the audience is just observing it, you still feel them, you still hear them, you still get a sense of where they are in your production, whether it's a funny play and you're getting lots of laughs, or whether it's a more serious play and you know they're with you. So in this play, even though it might be difficult, the actors, they love it though, and that they're going to crave that interaction with the audience, because I think that's what they're naturally drawn to anyway by being actors on the stage. There's nothing that can replace that liveness, that sense of we're all in the same room together trying to wrestle with this play's themes, and I'm speaking it and you're hearing it and we're all together. And that's a societal thing that's been true for thousands of years. And I think that's something that film and TV has a much harder time duplicating. So the fact that this play is a little more, let's say, intimate between the audience and the actors, I think they actually love it. I'm not saying it's not difficult, because I think you're right, because also that comes with, like I said, unpredictability. But I think they're really going to enjoy that part of it.
So is that what you're trying to invoke, this type of deliberate consciousness from the audience?
Well, I mean, it's not my technique per se, because Posner writes it into the play. Now, how it manifests and how it exactly is going to work in the Dow Arena at Pierce College will be our own production and our own way of making that happen. But it's not like we thought of that great idea, like, hey, let's have the actors, you know, talk to the audience about whatever. It's definitely in the play, but the play is a blueprint. It just gives you suggestions and ideas about how to actualize that feature of the play, and then you have to decide how that's going to work with your own production. So it's not just my idea, but because the playwright gives you room for that. But how we do it, there's also, like I said, an element of surprise and an element of, you know, we don't know what's going to happen until the audience gets there, because we've not done it in front of them yet, so we have no idea how they're going to respond. So
okay, Anthony, I'm going to set something up real quick.
Okay.
Have you ever read a word and you've read it 1,000 times and you find yourself at a chance you can use it in a conversation and someone's like, oh, that's not how you pronounce it?
Yeah, sure.
Let me ask you, what's challenging about bringing this script to life? Because I feel like those two are kind of one and the same, except on a grander scale. You know, you're producing a play. Like, what are the challenges?
So the challenges are trying to convey to the audience that this play and the playwright has a particular message, but you don't want it to feel like you're watching either a lecture or you're watching some sort of debate that's on a forensics team or something like that. You're watching real live people with real passions and emotions, and yet you still want the overall theme of the play to be presented to the audience in a way that those two things should happen quite fluidly. And that's a big challenge, to have it hit all those and points and check all those boxes of what the play is trying to say, but also make sure that they're being told truthfully by people. And so that's always a big challenge, because I think even Chekhov presents that challenge as well. And another challenge, I think, of the play and doing it in the arena is that you have audiences on three sides. And so when you're staging it, there's also a kind of a choreography that you have to employ so that all audiences get all of the play. So that's just a technical, you know, challenge of that. So those kind of two things together are probably the most interesting technical challenge. And then, like I said, a thematic challenge of making sure the audience is, okay, I know what this play is trying to say, but I don't feel someone's preaching to me or someone's trying to, you know, present this kind of dry academic material. Because, you know, Chekhov wasn't an essayist. He was a playwright. And yeah. Then Posner is the same way.
All right. Let's circle back a little bit.
Okay.
This is the first play you are directing at Pierce College.
Yes. I mean, I have a long, I stress long, history of being at Pierce College, because I was a student here many, many years ago. And I've I think I could say confidently that I would be considered part of the Pierce Theater family. Like I said, it's many decades now even. And yet this is the first opportunity where I've actually directed for the main stage as an adjunct faculty. So that's been a huge joy and a huge pleasure and privilege for me to be back in my own stomping ground in that sense, because I know exactly, you know, the moment that I started up there in that theater department and how many plays I've been in there, and to feel like I've taken that next step to join the faculty and to direct this play has been wonderful. So
what came first, the chicken or the egg? Were you like, I want to direct a play, I'll take whatever plays next? Or were you like, stupid effing bird, that's me, that's all me, I want
to
do that?
So I would say yes to both. I'd say yes to both, because the process actually is quite interesting, where I was invited to join the faculty actually last year. And so I taught a theater 101 class. And so once the faculty all gets together to decide a season, each faculty member will sort of put in what they think would be great for the season. And then they all talk about the choices that we make. And then we kind of, you know, do a formal and informal voting about what plays will make it. And then, of course, the department chair and the theater manager and all the other folks that really make the final decision will say what it's going to be. So then they have their season, and then the full-time faculty will decide which ones they want to direct. And then there'll be some plays that perhaps haven't been assigned. And so then that's when I was invited to direct one of the plays that I actually helped choose the season. And I chose Stupid Effing Bird as one of the several choices that I think should be part of the season. And so then I, you know, was jumping at the chance that it was given to me. And I said, yes, I'm so glad that I'm directing a play that I actually was one of the ones that brought to the table about maybe we should do this play. And that's, you know, because of my love of Chekhov and also love of seeing how theater can continually reinvent itself and reform itself, that yes, it's Chekhov, but no, it's not Chekhov. And it's this, you know, very vibrant piece of theater that I think is going to be really a fun ride for the audience. So,
okay. So let me ask you this.
Okay.
With, as you put, a meta theatrical play.
Yeah.
With a very play, who should not come see this show? Is there anyone that is... is going to be like put off or like what?
They may be.
Yeah.
They may be. I would say anyone that has a definite dislike of profanity would not want to come to this play. I would say anyone that might be uncomfortable with people having their hearts on their sleeve and really emoting in very powerful ways, and they're uncomfortable with that because they would rather be understated or reserved, maybe they wouldn't like this play. And, you know, there's also some scenes that I think challenge an audience's notion of itself to say, I just want to come to this play. I want to enjoy it. As I said before, I just want to get away from my, you know, my life for a little bit and have this little respite in the theater. And so this play doesn't allow you to do that. It doesn't allow you to be so complacent. It as soon as you step through the doors, then now you're a participant in some way, shape, or form. And you might not actively participate and go on stage and do anything. You might not as far as that. But the way that the play unfolds, you'll see that the playwright and then by extension us, the actors and director, have invited the audience to be part of the discussion whether you like it or not. So if you want to remain passive, then I'd say this might not be the play for you. But I guess what I want to emphasize is that there's the converse of all of that. People that like language that is truthful and honest and real and visceral, and then people that like the fact that a theater and a play is trying to confront major social issues or other issues that that should be commented upon in an artistic way. I mean, those are the people that'll love this play.
And this may be a little bit more of speculation, but isn't it very telling that however long ago, you know, Chekhov wrote The Seagull,
yeah,
those core units, those little fundamental building blocks are still relevant today?
Yeah, absolutely, because I think what Chekhov was speaking of was actually not invented by him either, especially this play, his play, The Seagull, that asks the question, what is the role of art in society? What is the role of theater specifically in society? Does the theater have the transformative potential to affect change in an audience member's life as a result of seeing this play? And I think we sometimes allow movies and TV to do that because I think we do that much more often. But with plays, I think sometimes audiences aren't as prepared for that or aren't as ready to allow that to happen and is open to it, because I think sometimes a theater gets so defined by, oh, Broadway, that's theater, which I'm not saying it's not. And I'm not saying that commercial theater is a bad thing at all. But I think that a lot of people going to the theater with expectations that they're going to see something that they might on film and TV, or the fact that it's going to be a Broadway musical. And there's this whole other world of the theater that says, we want to invite you to this world, share our story with you, and ideally you walk out a slightly different person than when you came in. And Chekhov was asking that 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, and we're asking that now. And the Greeks were asking that 2,500 years ago, and Shakespeare was asking that 400 years ago. So it's not a new idea, but the way that that idea is manifested is what each playwright, I think, you know, takes a crack at. Because with the through line of all of them is that I think they feel that the theater does have that transformative potential, and you just have to put it in front of the audience and see if it works and see if it clicks in that way.
Okay, so what I'm getting is that the play isn't trying to change you for what the play thinks is a better person, but it wants you to be more aware. Like, I'm a person. I'm here right now.
Right.
Whether that's a bad or a good thing, you know?
Yeah. I think that it does ask you to be more present than, as I said earlier, you might be in another type of play. And also, I think that both Chekhov and Posner, they're presenting questions more than they're presenting answers. And they want the audience to at least wrestle with those ideas. And the playwright in the show or in the play itself, his name is Conrad, he's the young playwright that has this idea that the theater of his mother's generation is a boring kind of lifeless theater that's just about not quite detective stories, but that type of thing. Oh, there's a secret, and somehow the secret's going to be revealed, and by the end of the play, all the little plot points are tied up nicely in this little bow. And he's responding against that to say, no, there should be new ideas and new forms of theater that really shake people up. And he really calls for that shakeup to happen because he feels there's too many effed up things in the world for people to be complacent about. And whether it's social issues that motivate him, or whether it's issues, I don't know, I'm just making things up, but whether it's climate change, or whether it's the current administration, or whether it's whatever, he's trying to wake people up in some way. And the first way to wake them up is to have them realize that they are here in the space with us as actors, and can you just be here with me, and then see if we can work these things out together. And it's, like I said, it's requiring more of an audience. And I think that's why Posner is really interested in as well. Because as I said, I don't want to feel like I'm privileging theater too much, because if I talk about television and film being one medium for one purpose, I'm not saying that's necessarily a negative or a bad thing, but I think that there's a sense that we consume most of our art as passive beings. We go to a theater, the room gets dark, the images go on the screen, and we just experience it. Television, it's even more so, where you're in your own house and you've got your food and you've got your beer and you've got your whatever, and you flip on something that'll make you laugh or cry, and there's a passivity. It's all happening to you. And I think Conrad in the play, and by extension perhaps even Posner, is asking for more than that. That if you're going to be in this room, we're going to do this together, and we're going to sort of wake you up and ask you to be a participant, because once you get outside, you should be a participant in your society as well. That you should be just as enraged as I am about this litany of issues that he's passionate about, and you should go out and want to make change too. And he's saying that the theater can inspire that, perhaps in its idealized form in his mind. Now, whether he has the talent to pull that off, or whether the audience will be open enough to experience it that way, we'll see.
Well, either way, it's necessary, right? Because, if you're consuming usual media where A, B, and C happens, you get used to A, B, and C.
Yeah.
But like you're talking about, if you open the hole from A to Z, we have the room for everything else.
Exactly. Because I think that's the only way that art moves forward, or the theater moves forward. And there's always going to be a new generation of artists that will confront exactly how to do that, because I think that's what we've been wrestling with for, like I said, for hundreds or thousands of years, is how do we as artists respond to the time we live in? And that response may take forms that feel old, and that response may be forms that are fresh and new and exciting. And that's what Chekhov was writing about in his time, are these necessary new forms. And that's why he himself was a new form playwright, because he didn't write like anybody else. And I would argue that not many people have ever written like him after him. And then Posner's trying to capture that same sort of zeitgeist, that same sense of I'm going to offer a new generation a way to have theater shake things up a bit and be a reinvention of itself.
I'm sure new form is pretty polite, when in actuality I think it's more challenges of the form, because I'm sure there was some backlash, the first couple times either this play or the sequel was performed.
Chekhov was quite successful. There were some early failures that he had in his life, and then there was this relationship that he had with a director and actor named Stanislavski, and then that's when they kind of matched those two energies of the perfect play with the perfect director, and then that's when he got more famous. And then actually it turns out that he ended up having a falling out with him later on, but I think that there's something necessary about the idea that Chekhov, wrote the words and tried to exact the new form on paper, but then it took someone to interpret that and bring it to life on stage. And I think that's where Stanislavski came in. So there is that challenge that, once again, a playwright always has the blueprint for it, but then it takes the actors and the director and the designers and everyone else to bring it to life. And so if you're going to embrace the idea that it's a new form and it's challenging, then we have to embrace that same idea that, yes, we're going to put form put forth this idea in a way that the audiences may totally reject and may be completely, bothered by, because they're as you say, they're not used to it. And I think that's where you can make, you know, safer choices in the theater, and or you can make some more, you know, dangerous choices in the theater. I'm not saying that, you know, there's anyone in the theater that should feel like they're walking into anything dangerous, but I mean, just dangerous as the idea of challenging the status quo can sometimes be perceived by people as dangerous, so.
All right. Now, let's slow things down a little bit.
Okay.
As the show's winding down, what's one thing you want Pierce College to know about you and the play?
One thing that Pierce College should know about me and the play. Well, other than what I've already said, I would say that what I would hope they would know about me specifically is that I'm just first of all, I'm so thrilled about this opportunity, and then also to know that I have such absolute faith and joy in working with these Pierce students, and the idea that I am just the person that's kind of pulled everything together and tried to inspire the actors to do the best work they can. What I don't want them to think is somehow I had all the ideas and I just presented it to the actors and they just did it. I don't work that way, and I've never worked that way. I've been an actor too long to know I don't want a director just to come in and start basically barking orders at me. Is that these actors have been tremendous. There's some younger Pierce students, and there's some students that are, you know, of a different generation, and they've all, I think, worked together really well. And they are just amazingly gifted people. And so I would say what I want, you know, the audience to know about me specifically is that I honor their work so much that I just find myself kicking back in rehearsal sometimes just saying, like, it just can't get better than this. You know, I'm at a place that I enjoy working. I have a long history here. I've hopefully inspired and motivated the actors once again to do, you know, the best work they can. And then bam, it just happens in front of me. And I say, yeah, this is why I do it. Now, we still have a lot of work to do, yeah. Because we're not quite there yet, but I still am able to recognize those gems when they fall, you know, and I just pick them up, put them in my pocket. Oh my God, that was a beautiful moment. And I, like I said, it's been such a privilege to work with them. And I think the second part of it is, what do I want them to know about this play? Mm-hmm. It's just to come with an open mind, just to come with an open mind to experience something that maybe you're not used to experiencing, and then just to go with it, whatever happens in the play, just to feel like if you start to resist it, it's not going to get any better for you. If you go with it, then I think you might find yourself experiencing the play in a way that you probably wouldn't have predicted when you walked in. So just to be kind of open to it and listen in a way that is more active, and also just feel that, you know, you can kind of embrace anything that happens in front of you. But also not to worry too much, because when we use these words that we're going to be confrontational, or we're going to be, you know, asking the audience to do things they're not used to, it's nothing too dramatic. I just mean that, you know, but there might be some parts of the play that'll feel like a very different experience. And just to stay open to that idea and let the playwright and the themes of the play and the actors just kind of be there with you and hold the space together.
Beautiful. That's actually the only word in my brain right now. Okay. You can pre-order your tickets on brownpapertickets.com, and the show is running for 2 weekends?
Yes, the 20th is when we open, 20th, 21st, 22nd. That's Friday and Saturday night at 8 p.m., and then we have a 2 p.m. Sunday matinee, and then we repeat that same thing the next weekend, 27, 28, 29 of October. Once again, Friday and Saturday at 8, and then Sunday at 2 p.m.
Okay, real quick. This is my actual last question.
All right.
This is more for me. I'm being a little selfish right now.
That's okay.
What is the best place to sit? Like, where?
Oh!
I want the primo seats.
You want the primo seats.
Yes.
okay, how can you see Monica the best?
Monica Vigil is our program director and is also engineering the show and is also in the play.
She is in the play, and Monica Vigil is an amazingly gifted young actor. And it's been just a joy to work with her. And I know that she's, you know, sitting right across from me right now. I would definitely say it outside this room as well. She's fantastic. So I'm really glad that she has this opportunity to show you her amazing gifts and talents. Besides that, if I've done my job and the actors have done their jobs well, then any seat should be good. But if you like a more traditional kind of head-on, then you'd sit in that center section. But if you want to get a slightly different perspective and see how the play might unfold in front of you in a like I said, a peripheral or a profile, then you can sit in those other two. But it's not like we present the play where you're only going to get profile over there. But mm-hmm. But there's a main action that I say is more front, but not exclusively. So in a way, the intimacy that theater creates, there's not a bad seat at all. But I would say, like I said, if you like that front-on view, then you'd sit in that section. And then, you know, if the closer you are, then the more you're maybe willing to engage with the play differently. Hmm. The closer you are. So if you want less engagement, sit further back. If you want more engagement, then sit closer up.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, guys, you've been listening to Pulse. My name is Victor Rodriguez. I've been your host, and this is KPCRadio.com.